You are listening to The Overwhelmed Brain. Today's episode is brought to you by GetOutOfTheMess.com. Let Asha, your Legal Shield associate, connect you to a legal insurance plan that's right for you. Quality attorneys at established law firms for about $20 a month.
I'll take it.
Are you annoyed by affirmations? Are you tired of that same old, rehashed personal growth advice that all seems to boil down to, think positively and all your problems will go away? If affirmations feel like lies and positive thinking feels like denial, then I want you to get ready. The Overwhelmed Brain is here to help you create the life you want now. Hello, this is Paul Coliani, personal empowerment coach and host of The Overwhelmed Brain. This is the personal growth show for critical thinkers. On every episode, we'll talk about practical, down-to-earth steps to help you improve your mood and keep you sane in this powerful journey we call life. I want to help you bridge the gap between your emotions and reason, causing you to discover why you do the things you do and what you can do to reach higher levels of happiness and lower levels of stress and overwhelm. Everything I talk about on this show should not be mistaken for actual medical advice or treatment and is intended to be for informational and educational purposes only. Always consult a physician before making any changes to your medical treatment. What you'll find here is an increase in your emotional intelligence, a strengthening of your self-worth and self-esteem, the motivation to be your authentic self, and the forward momentum to help you learn, heal, grow, and evolve. All right, I'm going to get into something that was inspired by an email that I got actually this week from someone who went through a period of a great relationship to the very next day, a breakup. And this is one of those things that happens in life. I mean, we all experience some sort of crisis. Everything's going well, and then everything is destroyed or devastated, or something happens that just totally rocks our world and shocks our system. And I want to talk about that today, because what do we do when we're in crisis mode? I've had people contact me in crisis mode saying, I'm in crisis. This thing is happening right now and I don't know what to do. And when they contact me in crisis mode, you know, there's very little that I can do in crisis mode, because crisis mode, or whatever you want to call it, when you're crushed, when you go through a breakup, when you get shocking information, going through a divorce, or a loved one dies, or you lost your main source of income, all of these things that can be devastating on their own put you into a state of crisis or shock. But what do you do? What can you do? And I'm here to say there's very little that you can do to make yourself feel better, unless you already have a philosophy in place before crisis hits. For example, one of my philosophies is that everything happens for a reason. I don't know if it's true, but I choose to adopt that spiritual or philosophical belief so that when crap does hit the fan, I'm not so devastated that I go down for the count and I don't get back up. I have to have some sort of belief system that prepares me for the worst. If I don't have that belief system, then when devastation hits, I'm not prepared, and suddenly life feels like it's ending, it's over. I don't know what to do, and I know you can relate. I know you can relate to this because you've had crises in your life. You've had devastating, crushing blows. You've had shocks. And if you haven't, well, you're probably very young. Or you've just been very lucky, because, I don't know, we all fall in love and sometimes they don't love us back and sometimes they do. And then sometimes they leave us, or sometimes we leave them, or sometimes a huge betrayal comes, or we love people like family and friends, and they go away, they die, they betray, they lie, they do all kinds of things that affect our life. Sometimes we love our job and we lose that. Sometimes we love our car and we lose that. Sometimes we love our house and it burns down. I mean, I'm saying some pretty yucky things right now that you might be able to relate to and maybe even emotionally triggering you. Like, oh, yeah, that one perfect relationship I had, or that one perfect job, or whatever it is. But I'm preparing you for the future. This show prepares you for the future. For example, when I talk about honoring your personal boundaries, that's great. You can do that in the moment, and you can work on that, and everything is fine, and it can be tough, and you're going up against some tough people to honor your personal boundaries with. But really, I'm preparing you for a year, 10 years down the road, when something happens and you absolutely must honor your boundaries. You must. I mean, there's no question. You must do it. And you'll have that moment of opportunity to use that tool inside of you or not. You'll have the moment that someone shows up in your life and wants to violate your personal boundaries, and you'll have a choice to make. And I've run across those choices in my life. And just in the past, I don't know, 4-5 years, I really started honoring myself almost regardless of the consequences. Now, I always say pick your battles wisely, because if you honor yourself with someone's gun in your face, then that may not turn out so well. And you may need to do something differently. You may need to lie. You may need to go against your values to get through a situation. I promote anything that empowers you and gets you through situations and gets you out of trouble. I promote all of that, whatever it takes, so that you end up healthy and whole and empowered on the other side. And of course, the ones you love also end up that way. And sometimes that does mean dishonoring yourself in the sense of, well, I have a value that I'm going to be in integrity and always honest. But sometimes you have to go against that when you're in danger, when someone you love is in danger. I mean, hopefully it's rare, but when it happens, you have to be flexible and you have to be somewhat adaptable to situations that come up. Because sometimes there are abusive people in our life, right? They show up and they abuse us, whether it's emotionally, physically, sexually, whatever it is, and they are bad. They are bad news. And we must either stand up and not take it and honor ourselves, or lie to get away from them, or manipulate them because they're manipulating us. I don't promote you do this all the time, but only in situations that require it. And hopefully you have that common sense kick in when you need it. Then the question comes up, well, when is a good time? What if someone's being a jerk? Should I just be a jerk back? What about morals? What about morality? Who defines morality? Like, I had someone post on Facebook the other day about moral relativity or relative morality or something like that. And it has to do with everyone has their own definitions of morals. And yeah, you could get stuck in the loop of what's moral. I don't really go in that path. I actually like to go in the path of what can I do so that it doesn't harm anyone and it keeps me and my loved ones safe. And sometimes you do have to harm others, but that's because they won't stop harming you. If someone won't stop harming you and you've tried everything you can, then maybe it's time to harm them. I don't know. But that's not my advice. That's just giving you a little bit of liberty to think outside the box, think outside of your values, think outside of your belief system, think outside of, I'm going to say it, your religion, so that you and your loved ones stay safe and healthy and move away from people that are toxic and abusive and all that stuff. So let me rewind here a little bit and talk about this state of shock, this crisis mode, because I have some steps that may help you a little while in crisis mode. Like I said, you really can't help people that are experiencing the devastation in the moment. You can be there for them, but are you going to be able to make them feel better? You know, can you go up to someone you love who just lost someone they love and say, hey, everything's going to be all right. Hey, why don't you feel better now? Let's go have some food and talk about all the good times. It's just not going to happen. It's not that good feeling isn't going to come up right away because they're still shocked. They're still processing things. So there's really not much you can do for people who are in that place except be there. I mean, that's like if we're talking about someone else going through this, all you can do is be there. Now, let's talk about you going through it. Let's just say that you received devastating news or something awful, terrible happened to you. Here's, I don't know if you want to call these steps or just philosophies to consider or action plan, however you want to see it. But if you're in crisis mode, even now, if you're in crisis mode, the first thing is to remember is that it's like being sick. You can't do anything about it but suffer. Isn't that awful? These are going to be somewhat hard to hear, some of them. But I want you to realize that, you know how when you get sick and you're sick for like 2 weeks or 4 weeks or even longer, hopefully not, but it usually goes away. I mean, let's talk about the common cold. The common cold usually goes away with most people who have a somewhat healthy immune system. So if you've ever been sick and it went away, that's what I want you to think of crisis mode or being in a state of devastation. In the moment, you are suffering and it's not going to go away. It's like being sick. How is that helpful? It's helpful because sickness is typically temporary. I know there are people out there that are sick and they're constantly sick, but I'm talking about any sickness that you've had growing up that went away. I want you to relate it to that because devastation doesn't have enough energy to survive for a long time on its own. It just doesn't. You can't be completely devastated forever. It just doesn't happen. You can be sad. You can be upset. You can be angry. But even that calms itself down to lower levels. It minimizes. So I want you to think of crisis mode or this shock to your system, as I like to call it, as if you were sick. Yes, I'm sick, I'm suffering, but I know in a few weeks it's going to end. It may take a few days, it may take a few weeks, it may even take a month or two. But this sickness will subside and I will be less sick and I will feel better later. But right now I just have to realize I'm sick. Nothing I can do about it. I can't breathe out of my nose or whatever it is. And I'm just going to have to go through it. Nothing I can do. I have to go through it. Okay. Next item is one day you will feel better and then you'll have a relapse. Oh, that's the next item. Yes. This probably could go down the list somewhat, but, yes, you're going to feel better. Like, I remember the last time I was sick, I just had the flu. It was like 2 or 3 weeks long. I'm still feeling it a little bit actually right now. And I remember one day I started feeling better. I was like, oh, thank God it's going away. I'm starting to feel better. And then that night I couldn't breathe through my nose and I woke up with a dry throat because I was breathing through my mouth all night and I still felt crappy in the morning and I was tired and a little bit dizzy and the next day. So I was like, well, this isn't over. So I considered that not a relapse, but it just didn't go away. I had a good day and then I had a bad day. So you have to be aware that there could be a relapse. So when you're feeling this devastation and it finally goes away and you're like, oh, I'm starting to feel better. Doesn't mean there will be a relapse. You just have to stay open to that relapse thing. Because what happens is you have emotional triggers. I mean, take a breakup, for example. Oh, I think I'm finally over her. And then that song comes on that reminds you of her. Oh, so now you have that to deal with. It's an emotional trigger. It comes up again. So now you're going to have a bad day. All right. Understood. Let's go to the next one. Number three is you have every right to feel everything, think everything, and believe anything that comes to your mind. What does that mean? Let's talk about a breakup. I'm so devastated she left. So I'm going to say, she's evil. She doesn't want to work on us. All we had to do is work together. We could have gone to couples counseling. These are the things that I might have iterated in my past. So I can totally relate to this. But, you know, what a BITC, you know, I get so angry and I can just say all this stuff and I'm allowed to do so. That's what I'm telling you. You're allowed to feel everything you want to feel, think anything, and believe anything that comes to your mind. You're allowed to do that. That son of a did this to me. I'm going to show him. I'm going to slice his tires. That's what I'm going to do. I'm not saying you do these things. I'm saying you're allowed to think these things. Don't be concerned about the morality police inside your head. Just think these things. Let it out. Because I want this energy to be expressed from you and out of you. So it's not festering inside of you. Just let it out. Have the thoughts. Have the verbalizations. Do whatever you need to do to think, feel, and believe anything that comes to mind. It's your mind. You're allowed to do it. And that helps vent. You know how something like a pressure cooker gets so much pressure inside that it needs to blow? Well, you need to help it vent so it doesn't blow. And that's one way to do it. Number four is, and this is kind of internal, call yourself out. God, I'm such an asshole. I'm a jerk. I screwed everything up. How could I have been so stupid? Don't leave anything out. Totally call yourself out. Call yourself every name in the book if you have to, if that's what you're feeling. I totally messed everything up. It's all my fault. Say it all. Say whatever comes to mind, even if you don't really believe it's true, because I want you to express it, verbalize it. Or, which is number five, write down how you feel about everything. And that means blaming people, blaming the world, blaming yourself. Be self-righteous or be self-hating. Write it all down. Let it all out. Nothing is off limits. No holds barred. Everything in there needs to come out, needs to be expressed. Because what happens when the pressure builds? You feel like you're going to explode. So this stuff needs to come out. And another way to do that is to find someone. Number six is to find someone, anyone, to express everything you feel angry about, sad about, ashamed, embarrassed by, guilty about, or anything else going on in you. Find someone safe. And if you can't find someone safe, that's why it helps to write it down. Or reach out to support groups. There's a ton of them online. Or in your local area, if you're going through something that other people have gone through, although it depends on the area of the world that you're in, but there's a ton of them online, and I almost guarantee you what you're going through, somebody else went through, survived, and lived to tell you how they succeeded and how much better they are now. So I think it's a good idea to find someone that doesn't judge you, that doesn't like give you advice, but will listen. And you may have to tell someone, I just need you to listen. I don't want your advice. I don't want your opinion. I just need you to listen to what I'm about to say. And I don't want you to think that anything I'm saying, I'm going to do anything with. I just need to express it. Meaning you don't want them to like be afraid that you're going to go jump off a bridge or something. You know, you just want to get it out. And in fact, if you don't get it out, you'll feel like you want to do something more drastic. This is why it's important to get it out. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I chose to sit in isolation with my sadness and anger. And that is so dangerous. That festers inside of you and it doesn't go anywhere. And that low-level pressure that built up inside of me gave me thoughts that I didn't appreciate when I got healthier. I didn't like the thoughts that went through my mind. And because what if I had acted on those thoughts while I was in that clouded state? You don't want to act on harmful, especially self-harming thoughts while you're in a clouded state. I mean, you don't want to act on them when you're not in a clouded state, but typically when you're in this clouded place, when you're sitting with this sadness, anger, upset, and it's festering inside of you, you're clouded and you come up with thoughts on how to get rid of it. And these thoughts might lead to harming yourself or worse. But I say only have those thoughts when you're not clouded. That way they're at least from a healthier space. I'm not saying that you should have any harmful thoughts, but I'm not stopping you from having harmful thoughts. I'm saying that when you have thoughts that are motivated by the upset that you're in, they're usually not in your best interest, and they're usually not the best ones to follow. It's like taking the advice of someone who's really, really drunk. And they say, what you need to do is put all your money into this stock. And it's like, I don't know if I should trust this guy. He's really drunk. Unless he's super wealthy. I don't know. But you might have a reason to follow someone like that. But the idea is that, do you take advice from a toxic person in a toxic place? Because you yourself, if you're in crisis mode, you might be a little toxic to yourself when it comes to giving yourself advice. You may not. I mean, but I know when I'm in crisis mode, not all of my advice to myself is helpful. I'm better now because I'm prepared. This is helping you prepare for crisis modes. But it's also, if you're in crisis mode now, something to think about. So I think you get the idea with that one. It's all about expressing, letting it out so that it doesn't fester inside of you. Number 7 is rest. You need to rest. Yes, sometimes working hard takes your mind off of things, but resting is a way to reconnect with yourself. You don't want to be so disconnected from yourself because you're always working or you're always keeping your mind occupied to get through it. I actually don't have a problem with that. If you need to get through some sort of crisis or devastation, and the only way to do that is to work hard, work hard, work hard, great, do it. I don't have a problem with that. As long as you get rest too. Rest might mean 10 minutes sitting on a chair, staring out the window, or sitting outside just to connect with yourself again. That's hard because inside yourself, you're having all these thoughts and feelings and maybe some pain and suffering. But I just want you to do that because inside of you is the, you know, you heard the term inner child. The inner child is the one that's in pain. The inner child is the one that's suffering. It's as if you looked at a child that was crying and you went over to that child and said, hey, what's wrong? Hey, what do you need? What can I do for you? Do that for yourself as if you were that child. And I like the idea of during that rest, you're nurturing that inner child, or however you want to see it, your soul, your spirit, yourself, whatever you call it. But it's an opportunity to reconnect with you so you don't feel like you're rejecting yourself. I think that's important to do. So yes, work all you want, try to get through it, but also reconnect with yourself whenever you can. Number 8, and these aren't necessarily in linear order, but these are all the things that you can do while in this crisis mode. This one is identify what you're resisting and come to terms with it. And what that means is accept what you're resisting. A-C-C-E-P-T. Accept what you're resisting. For example, the day my first long-term girlfriend told me that she wanted to break up, I was like, no, and I went into crisis mode. And then like 3 days later, I was thinking, okay, we're going to have a talk, we're going to make up, and then we're going to restart and, you know, start this whole thing over again and with a new slate. But no, 3 days later, I had the talk with her. I hadn't seen her in 3 days. We finally reconnected. And I asked her the question, is there any chance that we can work on this? Her answer was a definitive no. And that was crushing. So that was devastation on top of devastation, creating a bigger crisis in my mind. Because now, all my hopes and dreams were crushed. But what that also gave me was closure. Now, it didn't make me feel any better, but at least it told me that there's absolutely no chance. And I would rather know there's no chance than to think that there might be a chance and never get the chance. It's just too hard. I don't think I can live with what I call that open loop. Like there's an open loop, that cliffhanger. I'm not sure what's going to happen next. What do I do next? What do I say? If I say something, is it going to ruin what we've built? If I do something, is she going to see that as something that she hates and she's going to want to get away from me? I'll have all these questions in my mind. But if she says, absolutely not, there's no chance for reconciliation, I'm going to be like, Oh, that sucks. Okay. Now I know that I don't have to try to do anything. I don't have to worry about doing anything because there's no chance. As devastating and crushing as that is, it's also liberating. It's also the start of healing. Now back then, I still didn't heal for months. That was the time when I was depressed for like 6 months, or no, longer, because at the end of 6 months, I met someone else and I took that depression into my next relationship. So that depression continued because of all this other stuff I'm telling you about that I didn't do. Steps one through, where are we? Steps one through seven, I didn't do. I don't think I did most of them. And because of that, I held on to it. And it festered and the pressure built and I became depressed. And we don't want that, because crisis mode can create depression unless you're aware of these action steps or concepts. So identify what you're resisting and come to terms with it. Accept it. So what was I resisting? I was resisting that it was over. No, it can't be over. I hope, I have to keep this hope alive. Otherwise, I'm going to feel this pain. No, just accept that it's over. You already found out. She already told you it was over. It's over. And boy, that's hard to take and it's hard to do. But this is one of the most important steps, is if you can accept what you don't want to accept or what you refuse to accept, it's the start of the healing process. She told me there's no chance for reconciliation. I didn't want to believe it, but I chose to because I needed closure. Again, I didn't do any of the other steps, so I kept all that stuff inside of me. Had I kept it open and still thought, well, maybe there's a chance, which I probably did, I probably still believed there was a chance, it kept me suffering. Keeping a place of non-closure, of something that's open, that's up in the air and you don't know, is suffering. Resistance is suffering. How do you start the healing? You have to stop the suffering. How do you stop the suffering? You have to come to terms and come to acceptance. It's a huge step. A lot of people can't do it, but I know you can if you follow these other steps too. And even if you still can't do it, that's all right. It takes time. You have a grieving process that you're going through. Typically, crisis comes with grieving, depending on what happened. The grieving process is a step-by-step thing that you go through, but it does take time. So you have to allow that time. It might take an hour, it might take a month. You have to allow the time, but just keep aware of these steps at the same time. Number nine is the meditation I've talked about on earlier episodes. Yes, meditation. No, I don't mean sitting down and oming. I mean something that I do every now and then before I go to sleep at night. I close my eyes, I go into my mind, and I imagine that I'm the last person on earth. If you haven't heard me talk about this, it's kind of weird, but what it does, just imagining that you're the last person on earth, I mean, however that scenario comes to you. To me, I woke up one morning and everyone was gone. Like there were cars in the middle of the road. There was all the stores were unlocked and open. There were half-eaten breakfasts and houses. Everyone just disappeared. It was like Judgment Day. And I was the only one left. So I don't know what that means. But having that vision at night allows me to connect with myself in a way that is uninfluenced by any other human being. It's really interesting if you're willing to do it. And what I do is I'm traveling around, you know, I'm getting into any car that I want, and just contemplating life and trying to figure out what is my life without other people in it. Who am I? How do I identify with myself if there's no one around to blame anything on? If there's no one around to say, it's that person's fault that I feel this way? All of my emotions are entirely my responsibility, and they're uninfluenced by anyone. Just imagine that. Every single emotion, thought, and feeling that you have, entirely uninfluenced by anyone because no one exists. Where are you inside with that now? If you can't point the finger at anyone else, and it all comes down to you, how do you identify with that? How do you connect with yourself now? How do you look at your life? What does it mean to you? What's the meaning of all this? If there's no one else to point the finger at or say they influenced you, you take out the human variable from the equation about considering your life and what it means to you. So it's an interesting meditation. I don't know what direction it'll go for you. I've done it for several weeks now, and I'm learning all kinds of things about myself, about what would happen to the planet if there was no interference, which is an interesting side effect. but what would I do? How would I think? And where would my mind go? I went through periods of loneliness. I went through a lot of periods of solitude, and I went through a lot of periods of just looking up into the sky. I went through a lot of periods of just watching animals. There's a lot of things that I was doing and learning about myself and connecting with myself in a way I've never done before. So I recommend trying this meditation. If it really bums you out, then don't do it. I'm not saying it's going to work for everyone, but it's just a meditation. It's just a thought process that you can try on yourself and see where you take it. See where you go and see how you feel afterward. For me, I wake up with more appreciation for the people in my life. I wake up thinking, wow, I'm so glad that there are so many people on this planet to maintain the roads, keep the electricity running. I start appreciating things in a way that really makes me feel good. And of course, reconnecting with myself in ways that I find are very enlightening for me. Oh, and one of the last things I want to say about that is that what I've learned is that when there's no one around to say that person made me feel that way, you figure out that you are the only cause and effect of your emotions. And I like that idea because even now in the world today, we can look at other people and say, when this person's in my life, I feel X. But when this person's not in my life, I feel Y or Z or whatever. But if this person didn't exist in my life, I mean, I didn't even know about this person, or any person didn't exist, how would I feel then? How about if I woke up and I was the only person and I never knew any other people? How would that meditation go? Might be an interesting one. I might have to try that. And finally, step number 10 is processing, integrating, and healing. Processing is all the data that's coming at you. Everything you learned about the crisis, everything you learned about the event, everything you learned about yourself. You're processing. You're trying to figure it out. In crisis mode, you do a lot of processing and figuring out. Why did this happen? What happened? All this processing is taking place. Integrating is after you've done the processing, now you're taking that data and putting it in useful places in your brain to utilize now, to utilize later. These are all the lessons. You're integrating everything that's happening to you. Some good stuff, some bad stuff. Well, you probably think it's mostly bad stuff, but in hindsight, you'll see all the good that you're integrating as well. All the lessons that you take with you. And of course, the healing. The healing takes place after all the integrations and learnings take place. And I still stick by the healing starts when you give yourself closure, when you come to acceptance. Even though you still feel awful, terrible, bad, the healing has a chance to take place when there's an understanding of closure and acceptance. So there it is. Those are the 10 action steps / concepts / philosophies that I want you to adopt so that if and when there's a crisis in your life, that you have something in your toolbox. Because typically, we can't be helped in a crisis. I mean, if your house is on fire, then yes, the fire department can come and put it out. Yes, there is help in certain crises, but I'm talking about inside you, the emotional state that you're in. Sometimes it feels like it doesn't matter what anyone says or does. I can't get out of this state. And hopefully these tools will help you when a crisis does happen in your life so you can see the light at the end of the tunnel. And that's a good light. That's the way out. That's the exit from the crisis. All crises have exits. There's always a conclusion somewhere. It comes. It's like a cold. It eventually goes away. So there you have it. I hope that helps you. Let's reach into the mailbag and see what's up for Ask Paul. Be right back. I want to tell you about Asha with getoutofthemess.com. She is a Legal Shield associate that can connect you with what's called, or at least what she calls, a legal insurance plan. You know how health insurance works, where you know you hurt yourself and you go in and you pay your deductible down until you get to a point where maybe you need surgery, and then the health insurance takes over and you don't really have to pay too much. Like, you might have to pay 10%, or if you're on a worse plan, 50%. But you get what I mean. Well, this legal insurance is actually better than health insurance, because there's, first of all, it's not like health insurance where you have a deductible and you have to pay it down. If you use this service, then what you're going to find is that you pay about $20 a month, and you can have access to high quality attorneys at an established law firm in your state. I mean, yes, this is for the US and Canada only. Sorry, rest of the world. But it's a great, great service. I use it myself. Asha introduced it to me about 2 years ago, and then I finally got on the plan like less than a year ago. And I tell you what, it is so helpful to have a lifeline when you need it. I even have listeners of this show writing to me going, I'm thinking about going through a divorce, and you know, there's kids involved and there's other things that I'm really stressed about. And I recommend over and over again, contact Asha with getoutofthemess.com. There's no reason that you have to go through this alone. And for $20 a month, I mean, think about what you pay an attorney. $200, $250, $300 an hour? This system works because of all the people paying for it. It's not like they're calling them 24 hours a day and they're losing money. These law firms actually make a lot of money on this system. Not that I'm touting that and making that a benefit to you, but it gives them incentive to want to be in it, to want to help, and want to provide good service, because the members of that system provide ratings that keep them in the system or not. I mean, Legal Shield has excellent quality control, so they like to know who's getting served well and who's doing a bad job too. So they filter out anything that doesn't work and keep what does work running smoothly. So I want you to call Asha at 678-355-8777 and ask her about this service. I want you to have peace of mind and not feel like you're painted in a corner. I mean, think of anything that you could use it for, and you can call them and ask them a question. Go to getoutofthemess.com or call 678-355-8777 and check it out. I know it's going to be a huge help in your life. All right, reaching in the mailbag, this segment is called Ask Paul. This is where I read a listener email on the air and do my best to help resolve a challenge they're having. And here's today's message. I've been listening to your show for about a year now, and I've learned so much by listening to you, and I even use Asha's Get Out of the Mess service. All right, thank you. I'm going to call you Bill, he says. Anyway, I never thought I'd actually have a question for you, but here it is. My husband and I have been married not too long. Over the past several months, I've caught him on Craigslist browsing personal ads. I've talked to him about it every time I caught it, but it has escalated. About 2 months ago, he was talking to someone from one of the personal ads. What a shock. When I asked him about it, he said that he'd been feeling down about himself and wanted a random stranger to find him attractive, and that he would never actually hook up with them. While I have no evidence that he has ever cheated on me, it was still heartbreaking. I coached him through boosting his self-confidence and laid a clear boundary that I will not tolerate him talking to other people on the internet. Good for you, Bill. Well, 3 days ago, I caught him again. The other night, he was trading personal statistics like height, weight, age, among other things. I confronted him about it, and he said he's feeling down about himself. I told him he either needs to stop doing it and stay with me, or he can keep doing it and I'll take myself out of his life. He just got mad, tried to defend himself, turned the blame onto me, and hardly even teared up. He hasn't even said sorry. I have limited friends. I'm not close to any family member. I've been kicked out of my family for being gay, and literally I was kicked out when I was 17. and I'm terrified to be alone. We have a modest home and we both have full-time jobs, and I told him that I'm not sure what I want to do at this point, but I know deep down inside that I want him to show me love again, which he has lacked lately. I want everything to go back to how it was, but I know some people never change. I'm in a constant mental battle trying to decide what I should do. I know his behavior is toxic, but when I'm alone, I'm very sad, feeling lonely and lazy. I just don't know what to think. If it doesn't change, I know I'll need to leave him, but I don't feel the strength inside. I've even considered taking my own life, so I wouldn't have to feel the pain of being alone. Thank you, Paul. Bill. All right, Bill, thank you for sharing that. And a couple of things I want to talk about. First of all, why a family kicks their own blood out for being gay is beyond me. I never understood it. I get it, but I don't understand it. So I'm sorry that happened to you. I've seen more lives ruined because they were kicked out for not agreeing with their sexual preference or their preference for their gender, or what have you, something that isn't, quote, societal norm, you know, something that doesn't agree with someone's belief system, their value system, their religious beliefs, whatever. So every time I hear a story or see something on a child being kicked out because of his preferences, which really has nothing to do with anyone else but himself, and he's the one, or she is going to be the one to live that life, meaning good, bad, ugly, great, doesn't matter. They're going to live that life, not the family. It just puzzles the heck out of me. So I'm sorry that happened. I mean, like I said, I get it. Families sometimes have a perspective that, well, if one of us is the, quote, black sheep, that'll make the rest of us look bad. And if that's the case, then I think it's a limited perspective and it's a very selfish perspective. And I apologize if I'm offending anyone with this comment, but if you are choosing to keep someone out of your life or even kicking them to the curb because of their own personal preferences, I just want you to think about what would happen if someone took away all the love they had for you because of your preferences. For example, if my family came up to me and said, because you're heterosexual, you are not allowed to come home. That would be like, what? I don't get it. What do you mean? I mean, that's the first thing I'd think of. And the second thing I would think of is, why are you being so closed-minded? And why don't you love me regardless of who I like or who I want to be? And so, you know, that probably will never happen. But when you do something that's not popular in a family, then I think what happens is that the family culture is threatened. And when the culture of the family is threatened, then there is the fear. When culture is threatened, fear kicks in, and then fear dictates decision. And unfortunately, decision sometimes pushes good people out the door and leaves them behind in the whole family dynamic, which is very sad. So I'm not going to get into this whole being gay and being part of a family or being kicked out and what happens. But there's a lot of lives that are ruined, and a lot of children that are kicked out, they will turn to drugs, they will kill themselves, they will do a lot of things that are just harmful and unhealthy, and then the family still ends up suffering because now the child they kicked out has no one to turn to, and so they go off on their own and hurt themselves, or, you know, this happens sometimes, and now the family might feel guilty for doing that. It's a deep topic, and it really skirts on the edge of religious and other beliefs and values and things like that. But hopefully, and Bill, I know this doesn't really apply to you, but hopefully anyone listening has a family that loves you and appreciates you no matter what decisions you make in your life. But, you know, if you're listening to a show like this, maybe your family isn't the most healthy, or maybe they are, and you're just learning other stuff. I know a member of my family wasn't the healthiest, but at the same time, 99% of them were great. But I still had to deal with all this dysfunction that came with this. So I can't imagine an entire family being against you. That would be tough. So I understand where you are with that, Bill, and I'm sorry that happened to you or to anyone that's happened to, because when you have a support structure that just kicks you out, That's hard. That means you have to create a whole new support structure, a whole new culture, and a whole new family. And I hope that's what you're doing, because if you, like you said, you are afraid of being alone. And, you know, I hear this a lot. I'm afraid of being alone. And I always like to say, first of all, why? Why are you so afraid to be alone? I mean, there are some obvious answers, I know. And I'm sure one of them has to do with, well, my family won't take me back, so who else do I have? And that's why it's so important when you don't have a support structure with your family that you find another support structure in your life, whether that's a group, a support group, like I was saying in the last segment, or friends that you can trust, people have similar interests, similar values, and so on, so that you don't put all the pressure of your happiness on one other person. Like in this relationship, if you are not with this person, Bill, then is everything in your life destroyed? Because that is a lot of pressure to put on someone else, is to say, I'm not happy unless you're in my life, or I'm not fulfilled unless you're with me. Because that means that if you go away for an extended period of time, then I'm sad and lonely. And that can turn into a very pressured and smothering relationship. And it's hard to show up for people that always need that from you. It's very hard, actually. It's great at first because you feel so wanted and loved and needed. But then you're like, oh, give me some space. Give me some more space. Give me some more space. And then you're starting to do things that aren't really conducive to creating a good relationship. They're just not good because you're starting to look for other companionship that might not be so dependent on you. I'm not saying that's what's happening in your case, Bill, but that is one of the things that does happen for people who just don't want to be alone. So they have a tight grip on who they're with and they don't want to lose this person and all of their happiness depends on this person. That's just a lot of pressure. So that's where I go with that. Like I said, that may or may not be happening in your relationship, but that is something to consider in yourself. And you know, thinking about, well, why am I afraid to be alone? Why don't I want to be alone? That's something, if you keep listening to other episodes of this show, especially episodes on self-worth, self-nurturing, self-care, self-compassion, all of that stuff, as you do that with yourself, then the reliance of getting that from someone else gets less and less. You can still get it from someone else. It can still be part of your life. You can find people that will do that for you, but don't make it your only reliance. If all of your love and nurturing and support and compassion comes from someone else, what happens when that someone else is gone? You're setting yourself up for a huge, huge disappointment and sadness. And I understand where it comes from. It's fear of maybe abandonment and rejection. And of course, you experienced that when you were a kid, when your family did that to you. So that part of you needs healing. And it's hard for someone else to fulfill that part of you. It can work and it does work, but it can also become problematic in the relationship. So there's that. Let's talk about his, what'd you say? Looking on Craigslist and looking for a partner and then sharing emails. The one thing that really stood out in your email is you said, hey, if you do this again, I'm going to take myself out of your life. And I was like, yes, right on. That is good. That's you saying, I don't want that for me. I don't want that in my life. I have a boundary that if you stray outside the relationship looking for someone else, even if it's just a pretend, like, I just want to know that I'm attractive to other people. If your partner does that actively, and that is against your boundaries of a relationship, then you have every right to stand up and say, no, I won't stand for it. The problem is, when it came to catching him doing it again, you didn't create the accountability. You showed him that even when I catch you and even when I'm mad, it's all right because I'm still here. Now, I'm not trying to place all this blame on you because what he did was not good. It was betraying the boundaries of the relationship. It was betraying you, betraying your wishes for behavior that you would not tolerate. He did betray you, and he is to blame for that. He is responsible for that. But you are responsible for being congruent with your word. If you say, I won't be in your life anymore, I will take myself out of your life, and then he does it again, and you don't take yourself out of his life, then you are bringing on that suffering to yourself. You are bringing it into your life. Because when you make the threat or give the ultimatum, and then they break the rules, and you don't follow through with the ultimatum, they will always break the rules again. That may not be 100% true, but you might as well say that to yourself. I let them get away with it because I didn't follow through what I said I was going to do. So what does that mean? That means that your threat to leave the relationship didn't happen, which means, oh, so there's really no accountability whatsoever. It's like robbing a bank and the police say, hey, if you rob the bank, we're going to arrest you. And then they come to your house and they see all the cash lying on the floor and it's clear that you're guilty. And the police go, you know, we're really mad at you. You robbed the bank. We told you not to. You promised you wouldn't rob the bank. And you have all this cash on the floor. I know you did it, so you can't even weasel out of it. And then he goes, well, I couldn't help myself. I just wanted to feel like I was wealthy for once in my life. But you promised you wouldn't. You promised. I know, but I just felt poor. I felt destitute, and I didn't like that feeling. I'm so mad at you. And then the police say, this better not happen again. I'm going to consider this and figure out what to do next. And then they leave. It's like they didn't arrest him. There was no accountability. Now he realizes, oh, I can get away with this. It makes them angry. It makes them upset. But that's not my concern because I got what I wanted. And it might be hard to accept that Bill, your husband, got what he wanted. He wanted to feel attracted to other people. He's still communicating with other people. And now he's getting what he wants. And yeah, you're mad, but you're still here. So you're hanging out. Great. So now I can get what I want and you stick around. So that's like having your cake and eating it too. Perfect. I don't have to worry about it. I can just keep doing it. And what he's hoping, and I'm putting thoughts in his mind and words in his mouth here, but let's just say that he's hoping that your abused mind continues to tolerate more and more bad behavior. Because that's what an abused mind is. It tolerates more and more bad behavior until it either cracks or gives in. When it cracks, it's like, I can't take it anymore, and then you leave. You get to that breaking point. When it gives in, it's like, there's nothing I can do about it. He's going to do whatever he wants, and I can't really do anything about it, so I'm just going to stay here and take it. Or I'm going to stay here and take it and not like it and always complain when he does it. It's a completely futile relationship after that because you hate what he does, yet you stay. I hate when you do that to me and I am angry, yet I stay and I will continue to be abused in such a way. It's really a path to self-abuse. And I hate to say that because I know he is behaving badly. But the longer you stay in a room full of fire, the more likelihood that you'll continue getting burned. Actually, you will get burned. The room's on fire, you're getting burned. And the longer you stay, the more you'll get burned. And then finally you go, oh, so the longer I stay, the more I get burned. So really, I'm doing this to myself. What happens if I leave the room? Yeah, but then I feel the pain, the pain of loneliness. Then that's when I do the comparison. So you would rather continue getting burned then feel the pain of loneliness. And some people might say yes. Some people might say at least I get the little gold nuggets of love every now and then. Whereas if I'm alone, I get nothing. And that goes back to self-nurturing and self-compassion and all this stuff and having a good support structure. Because if you have none of that, then being alone is going to be too painful. And you need to create that. Because if you don't create it, your partner, your husband, your wife, your spouse, they will get inundated with you. They will feel smothered by you. They will feel so needed by you that it will drain them. It'll drain their energy. They won't be able to continue the supply that you need. And that's why it's so important to have friends, to have support systems, to have family. And I know you don't have family, which is why it's more important to have friends and a support system to get some needs met that aren't required by your partner to meet those needs. Your partner should not be required to meet all those needs. So if you've set up your life where you have nothing outside of your relationship and everything depends on this relationship, that is a scary, scary place to be, in my opinion. I mean, you may be very happy with your setup, but if anything goes wrong, then what are you left with? And that's a good way to look at your life. If anything goes wrong, what am I left with? What do I do then? You may not have the answer. That's why it's so important just to start building some sort of support structure. And the first thing you want to do is the self-nurturing, the self-compassion, the self-love, and really taking care of yourself as if you were your own dependent. You know what I'm saying? It's like, if you were your own kid or your own best friend, how would you take care of that person? That's so important to do. And that's what keeps you sane. That's what keeps you healthy and not so dependent on a single person for all those needs. All the joy and happiness and positivity in your life should not come from one single individual. Now, I say this not having a plethora of friends myself. I have a lot of people that love me. I have good family, but I'm in a place where most of my friends are my girlfriend's friends because I moved here while she had already established herself. And I love those people. But if I ever needed to make a phone call, the only person I can think of is my mom. And I rarely call my mom to share anything miserable that's happening to me, but I will do it. But at the same time, if she wasn't around, what would I do? And it comes back to me. Because I've done a lot of self-nurturing, self-compassion, self-love, I don't feel like I would be abandoned. Like if my girlfriend left me tomorrow, I don't feel like I would feel so lonely I couldn't handle it because I've built up this self-compassion and self-love. I don't feel like my unhappiness would last forever because I would feel the pain, I would feel the burn, and then I would come back to a nice place inside myself, knowing that I would get through it and that I am worthy and lovable, because that's what happens when you do this self-love stuff. You feel worthy. You feel lovable. It comes back to you knowing that you are important. You are significant. You are worthy. And when you feel that, then the pain of, like in the last segment, the pain of crisis, the pain of breakup, the devastation, the cataclysm, isn't so cataclysmic. It's not just a black hole and now you can't even get out of it. It's just another chapter in life and it's a huge challenge and you get through it. So that's what I want you to do, is start setting yourself up for a healthy transition during the crisis. And if you're still in this relationship, since you wrote this email, and this stuff is still happening, then it's ever so important to get this external support structure in place and this internal support structure and nurturing and loving in yourself. That's what I have for you, Bill. I know this is a tough situation, and I know that creating accountability and following through with it is probably the hardest part. But remember, staying in a toxic situation only allows the toxic situation to continue. Getting out of a toxic situation to then experience loneliness, in my personal and professional opinion, is temporary. You might experience some pain getting out of this relationship because now you have to deal with your own worth and lovableness, but you are all of those. You are worthy. You are lovable. And as the precipice of pain builds outside this relationship, if that's what happens, it'll reach a peak and then it'll be easier after that. And then you'll be less clouded. Like in the last segment, I was talking about once you're less clouded, you can think clearly and then you can look at your past and go, wait, that guy was toxic to me. And I feel so much better now that I'm not feeling the burn every day, getting that poison every day. And one of the things that happens in a relationship like this, or any relationship that's toxic, is that there's love and happiness mixed with a whole lot of pain and abuse. And you kind of associate the two and think that they're one and the same. And that's a problem because then you go, well, in order to get love, I have to feel pain. Because you stay in the relationship, that's how your thought process stays. Once you get out of the relationship and you go, oh, where's the pain of that toxicity I was feeling? It's a different pain, but I don't feel poisoned anymore. I just feel like this is an internal struggle now that I have to deal with instead of somebody always introducing more pain into my life. Bill, you're in a tough space. I know it's hard, but hopefully this helps you. And certainly consider the long-term effect of staying in something toxic as opposed to the short, temporary, and maybe even really, really bad pain that you might experience, but it goes away and you feel better and you meet healthier people because you know who you don't want in your life after that. Thanks for writing and thanks for listening to another episode. We'll be right back with some thank yous and my closing words. Back in a moment. Thanks for listening to another episode of The Overwhelmed Brain. I want to thank some people, including these following iTunes reviewers. They went into iTunes and reviewed the show, and I am appreciative of Grumble Beats. Oh, these are going to be funny. Jupiter Lady, Newsy or Nuzzy One, Petunia Pootie, okay, Jam Jar Superstar, and Dutch Encoder. Wow. I love the handles here. It's funny. What handle do I have? I think I just have The Overwhelmed Brain. Mine's kind of easy. Thank you so much for your review and your words. I read every one of them and I appreciate you. Thank you so much. And I want to thank today's sponsor. Asha has been a Legal Shield associate for quite some time now. You can go to getoutofthemess.com. If you're in the US or Canada and you're looking for some sort of legal service that you can ask any legal question to, you can get legal advice. I mean, you're really paying for an attorney's time, but you're not paying $250 an hour. You're paying like $20 a month. Well worth it. Call her at 678-355-8777 or go to getoutofthemess.com. And I want to remind you that the A to Z of Self-Empowerment is available. It is at Barnes & Noble. It is at Amazon. It is at a lot of bookstores, even libraries around the country and around the world. It's called The Overwhelmed Brain, Personal Growth for Critical Thinkers. It is the linear, sequential process from going to a place of no power to fully empowered. And I want you to be there. Get The Overwhelmed Brain today. You can get it as a physical book or an ebook or a Kindle at Barnes & Noble, at Amazon, wherever you go to shop for books. Are there still book readers out there? And I want to thank those in the Patron program. If you haven't heard, the TOB Patron program is where you can get all kinds of private episodes, private worksheets, stuff that I talk about on some of these episodes. I create into worksheets and put them in the Patron program. And also videos and group trainings and things like that. So go to patron.theoverwhelmedbrain.com if you want to join that program. And I want to thank you if you've purchased a book or a worksheet or used the Amazon link on the website. Every one of those resources helps keep the show on the air, keep paying for all the hosting and editing and producing and all the things that we do on this show once a week that we've been doing for three and a half years now. I appreciate you, and the Amazon link is the easiest way to give back, and that helps a lot. So if you go to theoverwhelmedbrain.com and just use the Amazon link before you shop, you don't even have to do anything special. You just click on the Amazon link and then do your normal shopping, and you won't know the difference, but it helps us every time. So thank you. You are making a difference. And finally, thank you to Kevin McLeod of Incompetech.com for some of the music transitions in The Overwhelmed Brain. And I want to comment on one of the reviewers that I mentioned their handle earlier. He says, first of all, I love your show, your podcast. I have learned so much from you. Thank you very much. In your latest podcast, you talk about someone who made a not so nice comment about your fake laughter. I still laugh when I read that. A few episodes ago, I read on the first segment critical review of, you always have this fake laughter and it makes me uncomfortable. I forget how she worded it, but she didn't appreciate that my laughter sounded fake. And I was like, no, it's not fake. I just laugh sometimes. It makes me laugh. But this reviewer goes on to say that someone does not like your laughter may be due to the fact that he or she may be very depressed or troubled. They're in a different state of mind than you. Can you understand that? Please don't make it a personal thing. I found your podcast on iTunes looking for answers to things I struggle with, and I think that's the same for other listeners. Hope you can handle some criticism. And again, I love your show. And I'm like, oh, okay. No, I don't take anything personal, and I love criticism. In fact, I welcome criticism. It's the first thing I read on the air if I get it. It's like, oh, good, criticism. Let's talk about this on the air. And sometimes I'll explore my reaction to it while I'm reading it. So right after I read it, I'll go, okay, let's see, how do I feel about this? I think no matter how confident you are in yourself, no matter how much you think you got it all together, one person can say one thing that really makes you feel bad, really makes you feel like, oh, I guess I'm not that great. I guess I don't have it together. I guess I'm not all that. And you read it and then you feel bad about yourself, like you weren't impressing someone or you made someone upset. I don't know if that's how you feel, but I still get that way. If someone criticizes me like really bad or even softly, I'll go inside and go, how am I handling this? How does this affect me? Because I know that my intentions are always good and honorable, and I'm always trying to do the right thing. So that's even harder when you're always trying to do the right thing and you still get criticized. It's like, oh, what do you do with that? Well, the idea is to take it outside of you and go, well, everyone sees you differently. Everyone has a different opinion. Not everyone is your mom who can trust everything that you do. Not everyone can just trust that you're being honest. So you have to take yourself out of yourself and you have to question your own reality, because your reality is yours and their reality is theirs. And like this reviewer says, he says, that someone doesn't like your laughter may be due to the fact that he or she may be very depressed or troubled. I get that. And I mean, that could be the case. It could also be the case that just like I have heard fake laughter on radio shows. I mean, I've heard radio shows that will have just tons of fake laughter about stupid things. And I go, are they really laughing at all this stuff? They keep laughing and they keep laughing and everything that they say is funny to them. And I go, this is all canned and fake. I don't want to listen to this anymore. So I will even get to the point where I go, this is ridiculous. This is all fake laughter. Yet they might think, no, it was real. I was having a good time that day. But that's where my mind went. And just like this reviewer says, they're in a different state of mind than you. Can you understand that? Absolutely. I can't disagree with that at all. And then he said, please don't make it a personal thing. I don't think I made it personal, did I? I'll have to listen to that episode again, but it's not a personal thing. In fact, it's a very non-personal thing because I share it with tens of thousands of listeners. I share it with you. I share it with the world, saying, this is what someone said. This is what I think about it. This is how I feel about it. And I always say I appreciate their opinion. And I have the right to disagree with their opinion. So whether I agree or not doesn't matter, honestly. What matters is that I want everyone to have the voice to be critical. I mean, that's what I teach. I want you to be critical. I want you to question things. I want you to be skeptical. I want you to be aware that there are people out there that don't have your best interest in mind or that don't live in integrity. Someone's going to hear me for the first time and go, I don't know if I can fully trust this guy. And I go, of course you don't know. How could you know? But if you listen to maybe 100 of my episodes and you go, okay, the more I listen, the more I feel more comfortable with him and the more it seems like he's honest. Or they may listen to 100 episodes and go, the more I listen, the more I realize that this guy is a scam artist. And I don't think I can handle this anymore. And there probably have been people like that. But that's because everyone has their own experience of reality. Everyone has their own filters that they filter information coming in. So no matter how much I talk about this, no matter how much I say, I'm an honest guy, I'm an integrity, what you hear is what you get, it doesn't matter. Because I'm not here to convince you, and nor should you be convinced. I'm just here to provide information, and if that information works in your life, then I've done my job. If you find something that you disagree with, or you want to criticize or give me constructive criticism, however you word it, that's also welcome and usually gets to the front of the line when it comes to this show. Because I want to be transparent. I want to show you that, hey, I'm not perfect and people are going to find faults, and that's quite all right. I am willing to put myself out there to be judged, to be criticized. I am willing to lay it all on the line, not only because it helps me deal with things and heal through things. If I got triggered when I read some sort of critical review, then that I would explore that and figure out, I wonder why I'm getting triggered. I wonder where these emotions came from. Why does this bother me so much? It gives me an opportunity to explore that. But also to show you that in order to be resilient in the world, you have to allow criticism to happen to you. It has to. You have to allow criticism in your life. It's like that day I had a professional radio reviewer review my show. He was so damn critical. He really put down a lot of the segments of my show. And one of the things he said was, one of your segments just ended. I didn't even know it ended. And I'm like, I thought I made it clear. And so all my defenses are kicking in as I was listening to his criticism. He put on an audio. But instead of just being defensive and go, well, it's my show, I'm just going to do whatever I want, I chose to listen. And I chose to make some changes. And those changes actually helped, because I was willing to let down my pride, let down my ego, and give someone a chance to talk about me in a way that I didn't favor. Imagine that. Imagine allowing someone to talk about you in a way that you don't favor. I think that is courageous. I think that is so helpful to you to be able to be in a space where you allow someone that safe place to express themselves when it's not favorable to you. That is a huge step in the right direction and a great way to communicate with anyone in your life, in any relationship. So that's where I'm going to leave this. And thank you so much for those reviews and giving me an opportunity to address some criticism. And you have every right to say everything. And what you believe, if you believe it's true, you have every right to believe it's true. Whether I agree or disagree doesn't matter. It's your belief, and whatever works for you is what works for you, and I never want to change that. And how do you create beliefs that work for you? How do you create beliefs that serve you? Well, you go into the world with an open mind and step into that power that's inside of you and be firm in your decisions and actions so that you can create the life you want. You always want to take steps to grow and evolve. You are powerful beyond measure. And above all, and this is something I absolutely know to be true about you, you are amazing.